Welcome to Blightbringers, Legion of Everblight podcast. I'm your host, Tyrone. Joining me this week is Ryan. Welcome back, Ryan.
What up, everybody? It's the quarantine edition. Hope you're not getting too stir-crazy. And if you are, remember, murdering people in a shut-down ski resort is probably fine.
Is that like, are we going by purge rules now? What's going on?
Ah, man. The Shining.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess that's a thing, too.
Did you really not get that one? All right. I just lost a little bit of respect for you.
Listen,
but only a little.
I've seen it. Just, it's not something I refer to.
Well, there's your first problem. Well done, you.
All right. So, you wanted to casters again. Or warlocks, I suppose.
Yeah, I figure since it's quarantine time for everybody, and I hope everyone out there is staying safe and happy and away from each other. You know, all the important things in life. Nobody was really getting games in. Like, it was kind of impossible, except for Vassal, or if you wanted to be that guy who was just like, yeah, I don't give a shit about other people, it's fine. Which, fuck you if you're that guy.
Yeah.
So I figured this would be a good time to, you know, get a better handle on the casters, really kind of look at their kits a little bit, and figure out where they go so that when we can play games again, we're all armed with information. Not necessarily correct or valuable information, but information nonetheless.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So figure we deep dive a couple casters, see where they land, and then, you know, maybe all be better people at this game, which we play for fun, and hopefully don't get anyone killed in the process.
Perfect.
Beautiful. So we're going to work our way down the list. We'll get through as many as we get through today, and then pick up whenever we feel like doing this again at some point.
Yep.
It's not like we have that much else to do. So we're going to start with Abby too, because she's the top of the list in War Room, and that's what we're going with. So we got Abby too. She's speed 7, strength 8, which is pretty irrelevant, mat 7, rep 6, also irrelevant, def 15, arm 16. She's got flight, medium base, 2 pow 14 magical claws at half an inch, and a pow 12 stinger at 1 inch. She's a Fury 6 Warlock with 18 boxes and 28 War Beast points.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out her Stinger has Energy Siphon, which is a really pretty good rule.
Yep, Stinger says that when you hit an enemy model with one or more Focus or Fury, the model loses one Focus or Fury, and she gains it. So it's a kind of a neat way for her to get back up to 6, or, you know, even just have a free couple boosts if she goes into something that has a couple Focus or Fury points on it.
Yeah.
Back Burkhard has Alpha Hunter, so basically if she kills a thing during her activation, everything beginning its activation, and well, every war beast beginning its activation in her control gets plus 2 speed in that, and they auto run charge and power attack for free. Power attack is the one I see people forget a lot. Free tramples are not always immediately like, hey, I should do this, but it's super nice to have when you need it. And then she just has Repo 5.
Yeah, those abilities are great.
Yep, she positions herself as kind of a front to midline warlock who can get in and beat some stuff to death, and then back out. You want to go off to talk her spells?
Yeah, for sure. So she's got Bracer as her only upkeep, which is down from Abby 1, but that's fine. We got Hexbolt, it's a range 6, Pow 13 spell. Range 6, is that right?
Yep, it is.
Okay. I'm reading off Formerson University. It's like, that seemed wrong, but okay.
It's short range. It's the same thing Hex Hunters have.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it gets the job done. It can trigger Alpha Hunter from range, which is something that you might need. We got Psycho Surgery, which is probably her bread and butter. Each model in the Spellcaster's battle group currently in its control range can immediately remove D3 plus 1 damage points. The spell can only be cast once per activation. It's cost 2. Keep in mind that when you cast it, you roll for each War Beast individually, not one roll and then heal that much for each War Beast. And
yep, it eats a little bit more clock than you think.
Yeah, and then finally Return Fire, which I don't believe I've ever cast, but is kind of neat. One target-friendly faction model is targeted by an enemy ranged attack. After the attack is resolved, the affected model can make one basic melee or ranged attack, then Return Fire expires. Lasts for one round. It's a neat spell, but kind of like a... You need to have a good target for it, I think.
Yeah, I think I've cast it fairly minimally. It's not often that I think it comes up. because it specifies you have to be targeted by a ranged attack for it to trigger, so it's kind of eh.
Yeah. Alright, and her feat, Metamorphose. For one round, models in Absalonia's battle group currently in her control range get +2 speed, or +2 strength, flight, and their melee weapons become ranged. Pretty good.
Yep, also lasts for a round, so you get reach during your opponent's turn, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it helps tie things up.
Sure does. So, as far as Abby 2 goes, she's one of those casters that after Oblivion, I feel like she can kind of play in every theme. So, you know, you put her in Ravens. She's got Hellmouth there to help hold down Scenario a little bit. She's got some cheaper units in the form of Rotwings or Grotesques that don't need to necessarily be near her. Because she's only Fury 6, the 12-inch control range is a little small on some of these scenarios. It can get hard to be everywhere and be relevant everywhere. So being able to have a self-independent unit like Striders or Grotesques that can kind of run around and hold down the flank that she's not on or just tie things up is super useful. You've got Raptors if you want something that's a little bit harder to get rid of and then can contribute from range as well, depending on how your points line up. Obviously, Ravens has a bunch of the some of the better solos with Deathstalkers and Assassins and Fianna 1 in some cases. There's been some talk of weird tech with her, so that's possible.
Yeah, I think the main thing you want to keep in mind, though, when you're looking at themes for her is, like, which Warbeast does she get?
Yeah, so that's an interesting one to always consider, because she can always bring Proteus with her, because they're bonded. If you're in Ravens or PT, she can bring Golab, which Golab is always a good addition. I have yet to see a list, well, can't say yet to. I have very rarely seen a list where I'm like, I don't need if I know if I need Golab or want Golab here. Like, he's just a solid beast in almost every list and gets a bunch of work done. You know, if you go to Children, you've got Azrael, Typhon, Zuriel now. And then if you go Oracles...
Just Proteus?
Yeah, it's just Proteus. There's not really a lot there for her, but I still think there's some value in being able to take some cheaper minions that, again, can maybe ambush or just hold down a zone. Especially with Incubi, if she can afford to take the a free rec point or two of them and maybe a unit of ambushing pigs. That can potentially hold down a side for a turn or two and let her rule the other flank and really just kind of make it difficult for your opponent to score a down scenario. It seems like that's one of the ways that she loses kind of most often is scenario because of the short control range, and typically she wants to be so beast heavy that it's hard to stay relevant on some of these super wide scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think ambushers are a good call for her. And finally, we have Primal Terrors, where you get access to Golab again, and you get all Rotwings still, and what else do you get? Hellmouths? Free Hellmouths, which is very good.
Yep, you also get a Muck, which makes her Hexbolt range 8. Gives her the Unbinding, so you've got a little bit of upkeep removal, which is a thing that she kind of, depending on the list, she can really suffer from. And then you also get access to his bubble of 10-inch anti-incorp, which is, you know, if you have that, you don't have to take a Naga or a Misspeaker. It also gives you Chosen, which, I mean, having a unit like Chosen that can just hold down a flank kind of indefinitely is not a bad thing for her at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fun interaction. I think it was Cutter came up with a while ago that we kind of, well, I kind of looked at and was like, eh, that's not really a thing you ever want to do, but it might be now. Because Bracer lets a thing be immune to knockdown, and anything base-to-base with it is also immune to knockdown, you can throw Bracer on, say, Golab, and run him into the middle of a bunch of Chosen that are base-to-base with him, and suddenly you have arm 17 Chosen that can't be knocked down. So they can make their tough check, still be standing there, and heal back up.
That sounds obnoxious.
Yeah, I mean, you're still relying on tough, which, let's be honest, is not really the best plan, but it certainly isn't a bad thing, and even if you only get it on one or two of them, if one makes it, like, that's, it's not gonna hurt you.
Yeah, right on. I like it.
Any other thoughts on Abbey 2?
Not really. I like my Abbey 2. I haven't played her in a little while, but I think she's very good still. Golab with her is just scary as hell. Like, she brings... If you have Golab and Proteus, then that's two pretty reasonable sources of Chris Wounds. Golab is obviously different. It's just an aura, which is a bit easier to apply, I would say, in most cases. Especially because it's not technically Grievous Wounds, so it does get through certain things, like the massive base to it. But then Proteus, he's always a good beast, you know? He's good to have along, especially with her. She gets, he gets Grievous Wounds on his weapons with her, so 4-inch Grievous Wound Gribbly Tentacle is not too bad.
Yeah, not at all. Not to mention she makes both of them mat 9, Golab speed 9, Proteus speed 7. Like, they can kind of hit from downtown, and Golab's walking threaten that list on feet turn is 13 inches with a Seraph. You know, that's pretty decent, and once Mechana Shredder comes out, you can get, again, somebody like Golab charging 7, 9, 11, and 16 inches threat.
Seems like, good.
That's getting into the territory of, this is a little ridiculous, like, being able to just hit from downtown. You know, same thing with Proteus, who will be doing the same thing at, I believe, 18 inches. Like, you can take some beasts and really start throwing them around once you start stacking speed buffs on them. And since they're kind of lethargic to getting hit, they really don't... Like most Legion beasts, they don't like taking a hit. Being able to stay back a little bit further while still threatening a good distance is, I think, going to be a major theme coming up you're going to see, especially after the CID and dynamic update and everything, is going to be beasts kind of playing, almost seeming like they're playing defensively, but having such a long threat range that they're still able to meaningfully hold portions of the board down and contribute. And if you can play aggressively with them, then really forcing people on the back foot.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, you think a Seraph is an inclusion that you normally look to for Abbey 2?
Yes. I don't think it's an auto-include necessarily with her, but I think it's definitely a consideration. Just because getting that extra 2 inches, even if you don't really ever use it, having the threat there of, hey, Proteus could threaten 7, 10, 14, or he's threatening 16, like, that's a big difference. You might be willing to put a heavy in 16 and say, okay, if you're going to go for it, but are you willing to put your caster there? Are you willing to put, you know, maybe a junior there that if he gets to it, takes one or two jacks and makes him useless. So having that threat just being there for some important pieces is, I think, enough of a reason to bring him.
Okay, and then the other question is, like, she has a 12-inch control range. Like, do shepherds become very important if you're threatening, like, 16, 18 inches?
I mean, I think so. But again, it depends on positioning, right? So if you're playing her where she's kind of the front piece and maybe behind terrain, behind a house or something where things can't get at her, but all of your beasts are staying a little bit farther back, they can probably stay in her 12-inch control while staying out of range and still being able to threaten to the far side of her control area. I think if you're going to go the super aggressive route, then shepherds are definitely a consideration and something worth having. But it's also a matter of what terrain looks like and where you can get things. If you're sending in Golab to go do a bunch of work at, you know, 16 inches away, and then he can sprint 9 inches back to relative safety, well, maybe you don't need the shepherds then because he can sit at the edge of control. But if he's got to really go downtown and start chomping things, then yeah, you're going to want to either have a place for Abby to go safely, or you're going to want those shepherds there.
All right, fair enough. All right, I think that'll do for Abby too. Maybe we move on to one.
My girl.
All right, tell me about Abby 1.
All right, Abby 1 is still Fury 6. That's a thing you will notice with many of our Warlocks, is they are Fury 6, and 5 of them, for some reason, are Fury 5. Still don't quite understand that one, and I'm not entirely sure I ever will. Anyway, Abby, speed 6, strength 7, which is fairly irrelevant. Mat 7, Rat 4, very irrelevant. Def Arm 15, She's got two Power 13 Magical Blight Claws at half an inch, and she is at 16 boxes, whereas Abby 2 is at 18. So she lost a couple boxes, and she doesn't have the tail attack right now, which, sad day.
Yeah, so her weapons have Grievous Wounds, which is pretty good. I don't know how often you're going to want her getting in there to mix it up, but...
There's the occasional time where she'll have to go in and tag something and then get out, or she can go in. She gets up to, well, back of her card is she's got Elite Cadre Forsaken, so they Forsaken gain Ashen Veil. She's resourceful, so she upkeeps spells on her battle group for free, which is a big deal because she has three upkeeps, so actually having six fury to spend every turn is super nice. And then the big one is Spontaneous Mutation. She can suffer a damage point at any time during her activation to gain one or more of the following rules for each damage point suffered. To gain one of the following rules for each damage point suffered. This damage cannot be transferred. Each special rule lasts until the start of this model's next activation. So she can pick up Ashen Veil, Warp Strength, which is plus two strength, or Wings, which is she gets plus one speed and flight. So if she feels like taking three damage, she can be speed 7. She can hit at POW 15, which, I mean, a pair of POW 15s, if you're with Fury 6, is actually pretty reasonable. I've taken out, you know, whites with her before and made a couple heavies that had taken a little bit of damage already. It's absolutely not unheard of for her to have to go charge a thing to get it out of, you know, a zone that she's trying to get, or to get it off of a flag.
Yeah, fair enough.
She hits relatively hard. That's the point.
Yeah. So the reason why she has these mutations is she has a spell called Playing God. Target-friendly living faction war beast is affected by the spontaneous mutation effects while they affect Absalonia. Additionally, once per turn, Absalonia can transfer damage to the affected war beast without spending fury. Basically, what this says is you warp things on her, and her beasts get it too, the ones that have Planning God. So that's pretty strong. It is an upkeep, so it's only one target, but pretty cool.
Yep, and because her mutations last until the start of her next activation, she can do them on her turn, have a beast that had Playing God on it, re-up her mutation, swap it to somebody else, and then it sticks around if that beast wants to activate again first. It still has all those mutations until she activates. It lets you cycle Playing God, so if you need plus two strength on a couple things, you can. If you need the speed and flight, which being able to hand out plus one speed and flight is super dope, it also lets you cycle that around.
We got a couple other spells on her card, two other upkeeps. We got Refuge and Wild Aggression. Both reasonable spells. Wild Aggression is good for getting the boosted melee attack rolls, and Refuge is great for just getting out of dodge.
Yep. So Wild Aggression is, outside of Oracles, I don't think I've really cast it too much, because you're handing out free charges with Flight and usually a Sorceress. Wild Aggression being half for stack is a little tough to swallow sometimes, but I mean, boosted melee attack rolls is not a bad thing. There's been a couple times I've thrown that on an angel and just been like, all right, it's mat 6 with overtake, and it's gonna bounce through this entire unit now. Come at me, bro. Refuge is always, always, always a good spell to have. Letting a beast go in and then get out free of free strikes as long as it hits a thing is super dope. She can throw it on herself, which I've done a couple times, to charge in, you know, clear out solo from a zone and then be able to get back to safety. It really helps with, you know, things like Proteus can do some weird stuff with it. Maybe you walk in, throw or slam a thing, and then because he made a hit, he gets to refuge back. So if you can play around terrain, it's kind of this weird goofiness to it. There was a time, I think it was the Sioux last year before, where Proteus walked forward, pulled a thing, and then refuged back, and then I had a Carnivian walk in, pick up a heavy and throw it at two others, knock them down, and then Abby Blight Burst. And all three of them were just knocked down in a Blight Burst, because fuck you, that's why.
That's pretty gross.
Yeah. Looking for opportunities to do things like that, if you can find them, is amazing. It's not every opponent or every time you're going to get to do things like that, but it's those kinds of little hit-and-run plays that you can really kind of mess with somebody's entire turn and make things, even if you're not killing them, make them kind of ineffectual while you're setting up to, you know, maybe you couldn't take out three heavies in one turn, but you've knocked all three of them down where they can't get up, so now you can position to either threaten them or threaten other pieces, or even threaten, you know, a caster or a big scenario lead where it's like, all right, you were going to try and do damage with these pieces, but now, you know, maybe only one of them gets a charge and the other ones have to run to try and contest various things. So this is fine.
Yeah, right on. Obviously her last spell, Light Burst, is like an area denial spell. It has some POW on it, but that's not why you're casting it.
No. It's a nuke if you need to get rid of like a Feral Geist, or if you just want to chip in maybe a couple points. It's only POW 13, right? So you can't really expect it to do a ton of damage in most scenarios.
And finally, her feet, and you're probably wondering, if I'm taking all this damage, it's probably a bad thing. Not true. Her feat is Panacea. Remove all damage from all models in Absalonia's battle group that are currently in her control range. Additionally, while in her control range, models in her battle group gain rapid healing. A rapid healing is Typhon's Animus, so it's not actually an Animus in this case, but when they get hit, after the attack is resolved, after the attack is resolved, remove D3 damage points. Panacea is great if your beasts survive a hit.
Yep, it's why I kind of tech her to deal with guns, because most gun lines, if you're positioning correctly and using terrain, aren't going to be able to just one round beasts. They're going to chip in a bunch of damage over a turn or two, and being able to say, hey, you wasted, you know, 8 to 10 minutes on your clock chipping damage into two or three beasts, none of that actually matters, and I'm just going to move up the board, is pretty nice. It also, there's a couple of cute assassination runs that you can do with that, because your stuff gets rapid healing. It's really easy to get, like, a flying Proteus charging somebody's caster over the top of a heavy or two, and then healing back up D3 every time it takes damage, so it actually gets there with everything intact, and suddenly their caster is dead, because maybe he only has 8 boxes left, but it's 8 boxes in every system. So he can still do everything he needs to be doing. Also, because it's removed damage from everything in her battle group, she counts as a model in her own battle group. So if you spend, you know, 2 or 3 turns just taking 3 damage a turn, she's back up to full and then gets rapid healing, which is super cute.
Yeah, we should probably quickly talk about how rapid healing interacts with getting damaged as well when you're the Warlock.
Sure. So the easy answer here is if you take damage, then you get to trigger it. If you transfer, you are still considered to have taken damage. So kind of a cute trick, and Thags used to do this a lot, and she gets to do it now, is that you'll take a hit or two, lose a couple boxes, and then start using your transfers to throw damage off on the beasts, and then as she transfers, she gets the D3 to heal back up. So if she's sitting on 3, maybe she loses, you know, half of her stack to incidental damage, and then you start transferring and she goes, you know, close to back to full, which is super good.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because it essentially gives you like a free transfer, like, yeah, of health, right? If you've used it correctly. And not only that, you do have a free transfer in playing God, and people will overlook that sometimes.
Yeah, the amount of times people have forgotten playing God is kind of ridiculous. Especially when people are like, oh, well, you're only camping 2 Fury, right? It's like, yes, I am only camping 2 Fury. That is an accurate statement. Like, but you've really got 3 transfers. It's a neat little... People will forget about it and plan on you. Oh, well, you can only transfer twice. I just need to do this much damage. You know, I played into a Signar player with her who was saving Dynamo until the end, and by the time he got to Dynamo, he's like, all right, he's got all of his shots in range, and he's just going to keep hitting you. You've only got your 1 transfer left, right? I'm like, well, I've got the 1 Fury transfer, and then I've got the Playing God transfer. Also, excessive healing is up, and he's just like, oh, okay, that's not going to make a big deal. And she ended up surviving that run on, like, 9 boxes.
Oh.
he just couldn't do enough. So the little things like that absolutely make a big deal with her. From, you know, all the games I've played, she's often going to be in the danger zone. So the key thing I've found with her is kind of learning what damage she can take and what she needs to get rid of. And also that she just plays a lot more aggressively than you would think. She's typically going to be as almost as far forward as possible, you know, providing terrain allows it, and just sitting there kind of daring people to try and come in. With Ashen Vale on herself, plus the Forsaken's get it, plus her playing God Beast gets it, you know, everything's relatively high defense, especially against living models, because that's obviously the only place that comes into play, where, you know, maybe they're going to try and come in and suddenly they go in after a beast and they're minus two to hit because there's a Forsaken standing behind it. Or they go after Proteus or Golab and it's like, oh yeah, he's def 13 or def 15. Good luck. Like, it throws off the math just enough where it can be enough to keep you alive and let you trigger feed.
Definitely. Are we talking about themes? Is there anyone that stands out to you, or is she kind of able to go anywhere?
I think like Abby too, she can kind of go anywhere. Like, it a lot of it depends on what you want, and kind of what you're teching her for. She's one of those warlocks, in my opinion, that you need to have an idea of what you want her to go into. She's, to me at least, isn't like a take on all comers, because your theme choices are gonna kind of dictate what you want to take her into. So like, I always made her to be able to deal with gun lines because that was my big issue. So like, in that regard, Oracles is still a good place for her because you still get all the beasts you want, you still get all the fury support you want, and then you can take a unit or two of Valkyries that help survive those gun lines that normally you'd be looking at and going, I'm gonna get shot off the board. Less so here. If you're looking at maybe a more combined arms type of list, Children works absolutely well. Proteus, Typhon, Azrael, Zuriel are like a very good battle group. Fairly expensive, admittedly, but being able to run four characters and just kind of take over a board with, you know, crit pitch on Typhon, crit smite on Azrael. You've got sprays from Azrael, Zuriel, or Typhon and Zuriel, rather. You've got the shots from Azrael. And then you've got Proteus backing it all up as, like, your beater piece. Like, you can play a really weird hit-and-run game with some very expensive pieces and just make it super difficult for your opponent to be able to lock any one down. And because they've got slightly better defensive stats as characters, they're a little bit harder to get rid of, which gives you that better chance of surviving into something that's trying to kill them to be able to trigger feed. And then, you know, Ravens and PT both give you some faster units in the form of Rotwings. You've got Cavalry to hold things down in PT. You've got the Ogres that can maybe hold a flank a little bit better. Both themes give you Hellmouths, which is a huge help to her, as it lets you really kind of double down on that weird hit-and-run game where you can threaten maybe the far side of a zone and say, okay, you need to put things here, but also I can kill one of them, sprint back, and then maybe Hellmouth drag the other one in. It lets you kind of hold area a little bit better. And then it's really about tech choices, right? Ravens is really good about killing off single wound infantry between Striders, Deathstalkers. You've got a couple more sources of Grievous with Assassins. You've got ambushing units. You've got some cheap throwaway units. You've got sprays on Banshees if you want them. And PT is maybe a little bit better at killing off those targets that have a little bit more armor between the Ogres, the War Spears, the Chosen. And it's really kind of a tech choice at that point between those two, in my opinion.
Yeah, fair enough. Like, I like the thought of Oracles and bringing like a bunch of shield guards for your relatively squishy piece to make shooting them even more terrible for your opponents.
Yep, like, oh, you're going to half kill this thing. Good thing it has shield guards and is going to heal up.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
But yeah, I like Abby 1. I think she's always been good, especially since the CID last... When did that happen? 2 years ago?
I think 2 years ago. It's been a while. Yep. It has been a hot minute since we got anything. But that's okay, because we're getting things soon-ish.
Yeah, so... Yeah. That one's a good choice. Look to her if you want to play a bunch of beasts. And if you got the Medusonia mini crate coming, extra props.
Did you get yours?
No, I haven't even got a shipping confirmation yet.
No, I mean, I meant, like, did you buy it?
Oh.
Okay, good. Same. We're going to have a Medusonia painting competition between the two of us.
I'm going to have to put an effort into something?
I know. It's tough, right? You're going to actually have to try. It's not like you're doing anything else. Quarantined, man.
I mean, I guess.
Don't sound so excited. Jeez. All right. This is what I get for trying to do something fun. Fuck me, I guess.
Sorry. This quarantine's having an effect.
Do you need people to send you, like, heartwarming messages?
That'd be really nice.
Okay, if you're listening to this, send Tyrone heartwarming messages and just tell him that he's not alone and that you love him. He needs to hear this right now.
Perfect. All right, why don't we talk about one more warlock, and it's the big chunky lady that we all love, the Mag.
The one that you don't know half the rules on.
Shut up.
It's not my fault, it's true.
I've played her like twice, okay?
Okay. I'm not going to get into it, but okay. So Animag, she's speed 5, strength 8, mat 6, rat 4, irrelevant. Def 14, arm 16. She has tough. She's on a medium base. She has a single pow 13, blessed and magical. Blessed is kind of a neat one to have. She's fury 7 with 17 boxes and 27 war beast points. So initial stats are she's kind of slow, but you know, like all Ogryn, she's kind of tough. 14, 16 is defensive stats aren't terrible, and mat 6 isn't typically a I'm going to go in there and beat things to death, but she can. Like, it's still alright. Back of her card is Ritual Slaughter, so once during each of your turns when another friendly Ogryn model destroys an enemy model with an attack while in this model's control range, immediately after the attack is resolved, this model can cast a spell without spending fury. This model can boost attack and damage rolls on spells cast. Basically, as long as another Blighted Ogryn kills a thing in her control, she gets a free spell. Super yep. Good. That can trigger off things like Vengeance, incidental attacks, free strikes, weirdly. I don't know why you'd be taking a free strike on your own turn, but weirder things have happened. She's got snacking, so if she does get to a thing, she can remove damage that way. Snacking does not specify enemy model, so she can, you know, chop up her own tentacles and eat them if she needs to heal up or whatever happens to be nearby. And then her staff has Mancatcher. A warrior model hit by this attack suffers minus 2 death for one round and cannot advance while in this model's melee range. So if she goes into another warrior model, she's effectively mat 8 as long as she hits it once, and then it can't move. The can't move part has, I don't think, ever come up for me. Ever. Because typically if she's hitting a thing, she's just killing it. But it might come up at some point. I don't know, maybe she just smacks a model that has 1-inch melee and then laughs at it? Maybe?
Laughs at the opponent's warcaster?
Yeah. Like, if you're playing into Sturgis, he's only got like a 1/2-inch melee, you can totally just charge him and bonk him on the head and be like, haha, can't get me. I don't know who would be playing Sturgis, but whatever. Or Jake's too, I think she's only got like a 1-inch melee. See that? These are totally casters that are just running the meta right now.
He's just holding them by the head like you would a small child.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, can't get me. Can't get me. Yeah, come on, little guy. You can reach.
All right. Ritual Slaughter is probably her key ability because she has 5 spells and all of them are good.
Yeah, you can cast upkeeps with it. You can boost attack and damage rolls, which is... Being able to boost outside of activation is super nice, and it is a thing people often forget about.
Yeah, so quickly, she has Gallows. You hit with it, you get to push D6 towards the point of origin. Good spell. X-Blast. Oh, just makes upkeeps and Animi expire. Good spell. Fury Strength. +2 Strength for a model unit for one turn. Warrior model unit, good spell. Carnage, friendly faction models get +2 to melee attack rolls while in the control range. Another good spell. And Bond of Gristle and Bone, target friendly Legion warrior model unit gains +2 arm and feign death. They're all good.
Yep. So if you're triggering it off of Vengeance, you might just be, for example, taking Carnage, because then the rest of your Vengeance attacks are probably +2 to hit, which is super good. If you're taking it on your own turn, maybe you're throwing out a free Hex Blast to get rid of a pesky upkeep or Animi that you don't want to deal with later, or it helps save some order of activation issues. If you're looking at pulling, maybe going after a heavy, well, guess what? Out of activation Gallows pulls it in towards, say, a Hellmouth, or towards a heavy that you're now just being able to beat the shit out of. And then, you know, Fury Strength, like, oh, okay, this, let's say, Ogryn model is POW 13 base. Well, now it's POW 15. Oh, it's standing near a Blightbringer. Well, now it's POW 17. This seems like it just got a little bit worse for me. Like, every spell on her card is very good. She can't really do all of them every turn, but that's probably not a bad thing, because Fury 7 is a limiting factor, and it's probably one she needs, because if she could just run everything on her card as much as she wanted, I feel like she'd be way too strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you're gonna upkeep on a Gristle and Bone in most cases. That's a Fury. Carnage you'll probably cast most turns. Fury Strength you'll probably cast like once a turn maybe, and then at that point you're down to two. So like, if you really want that Gallows, it's eating into your offensive abilities. So it's like, it is reasonable that you can't cast all of these spells, but again, you can cast one of them for free, so you might still get that Gallows or that Hex Blast.
Yep, it also makes solo hunting a little easier. Just because she can kind of reach out and touch people, especially with spell martyrs, because you can channel through a spell martyr with that, so you get a free spell and be able to boost it through an arc node. Like, that's pretty decent.
Yeah, like a 22-inch Gallows for free. Yes, please.
Yep.
24-inch.
Yeah.
So, not bad. Finally, her feet. Also super good. This warlock's amazing. While in Animag's control range, friendly Legion warrior models gain Dark Shroud, and their melee weapons gain Grievous Wound. Lasts for one turn. Dark Shroud is, while in this model's melee range, enemy models suffer -2 arm. That's a good debuff.
Yep. So she can independently do a 4-point damage swing for warrior models.
Yep.
And give them Grievous. Like, that's pretty decent. I would say that's pretty decent.
Yeah, that's pretty strong. Like, and then that Dark Shroud, if you have any beasts, if you have a warrior model near the enemy model, your beast benefits from that +2 strength as well. So like, or you know, -2 armor, +2 strength, however you want to look at it. Very good.
Yeah, so reminder, like, Hellmouth tentacles are warrior models.
They are.
It's just a thing. You can run a tentacle up and be like, cool, you're -2 armor now, and Golab's here. Hello, friend. Like, ooh.
Yeah.
There's a level of this just got weird that you don't really see too many other places.
No, this warlock is very synergistic with herself. Like, everything works together very well. She was obviously designed from the ground up to do a specific job, and she does that job admirably. Like, she is our heavy unit support caster.
Yep. She sure is, and she's very, very good at it. You know, the obvious choice for her is almost always going to be Primal Terrors, because Ritual Slaughter is super good, and that's where all the Ogryn are. But, I mean, she doesn't necessarily have to be in Primal Terrors. I've seen lists with her in Children. Turns out taking a bunch of Swordsmen and Raptors and saying, oh, hey, they're now POW 15, POW 16 Weapon Masters. Like, that's pretty good. Like, you'll scrap some stuff with that. You know, maybe taking her in Ravens and with a bunch of Grotesques and Rotwings and saying, hey, now they're POW 16 or 18. Like, these are cheap throwaway units that maybe most of them die, but if two or three get there with all the buffs, like, they'll scrap a heavy. Like, charging POW 18s are enough to kill a lot of heavies.
Yeah, and like you got to keep in mind, we still have the Blightbringer in faction, 32 points, an excellent unit support piece that just can apply its auras basically anywhere it wants.
Absolutely. The thing can, because of the theme changes, you can put a Blightbringer anywhere now, and being able to do that with the buff she brings to infantry, like, she can get a lot of damage done on a lot of wide armies. Her bigger problem is she doesn't do a whole lot for beasts. Carnage obviously helps them, because the +2 to hit will affect everything, but Fury Strength doesn't affect beasts. She can't put her armor buff on beasts, so it's a limiting factor there. She really wants infantry to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting, but she can have, you know, maybe a couple heavies as backup, or, you know, she can bring the Blightbringer and have a very large centerpiece that just holds an area. Also worth noting is her feat with Golab, or yeah, feat, her bond with Golab is that both of them will gain, what the hell is it called?
Swarm.
Swarm, yep. So they both gain concealment and -2 to hit for living models against them. So if she's got Golab on the table, like, she's def 16 against living models, that's pretty decent. And it takes Golab up to def 15, which is a very reasonable defensive stat line.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that he has that because I don't play him with her, but yeah, Golab's pretty good by himself, and yeah, even better with anime.
Yep, having him just be able to stand somewhere and be like, yep, I'm a 15-17, hope your warp wolves can hit. Like,
yeah.
It's pretty good. It works super well into a lot of the single wound infantry running around, or that was running around. You know, things like not Legion of Lost Souls because they're undead. The fuck are they called? Precursor Knights. Like, they are gonna have a little bit of a harder time hitting that. You know, Exemplar, when you see them, like, they're mat 7, sure, but do you really want to be rolling a bunch of hard 8s and trying to hit things? Probably not.
Yeah, that's a tough sell. We should just quickly touch on how Oracles is not necessarily the best choice for her, especially if you want to take a bunch of minions. Like, he really cares about friendly faction, like a lot of our Warlocks do, but because she's, like, friendly faction units, Oracles doesn't have a ton of appeal, but there is a little bit of jank that you can have where it does make certain models blighted, which is to, you know, all the warriors that you do take.
Yep.
So that means that any Ogryn you take are blighted Ogryn, so you can actually get the free spell in Oracle's Annihilation with specific characters.
Yep, so what the hell is it called?
So Gudrun and Ogryn Bokurs.
Yep, the Bokur, that's what I was thinking of. They become blighted Ogryn, so you still get Ritual Slaughter that way. There's not a whole lot of, well, like you were saying, there's not a whole bunch of friendly faction warriors in Oracles that you really want all these buffs on. Like, Hex Hunters appreciate them, but, like, they're at best going to get to mat 9, pow 14. Like, it'll still do some damage, don't get me wrong, but it's not going to do a ton. The fun one there, and I haven't actually run it, but I've thought about it a couple times and looked at it, is that your minions become incubi. The incubi are friendly faction models. They're friendly faction warrior models. So getting Fury Strength on them isn't going to happen, but being able to give all of your incubi Dark Shroud is pretty decent, especially when they can combo strike then up to POW 17. Like, that'll get some work done.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that. That's a really good point.
And note, you can get that in Oracles and I think Children. Yeah, that sounds right, because incubi are in there. So it gives you some options, maybe not something necessarily to rely on. You're kind of hoping your opponent gives you incubi at that point and just leaves them alone. But it's definitely a thing that can happen, and if it's not necessarily something your opponent expects, can maybe take out a couple key pieces, which is all you need.
Yeah, definitely. I hadn't considered incubi. Like, I love incubi. I think they're one of our...
Yeah, they're definitely something that's kind of unique to the faction, right?
Yeah, like, we don't have Recurgen, we have Incubi.
It's almost the same thing. Sort of.
All right, I think that'll do for Animag, unless you got any final thoughts.
I mean, my only final thought would be her. The obvious choice for her, like I said, is Primal Terrors, but I think if, depending on how you want to run things, it's worth looking at her and the other themes. It's worth looking and kind of exploring what she could maybe do in Ravens or Children or Oracles with a bunch of incubi. Don't discount the stuff just because it hasn't been seen at a major convention or because it's not the obvious power build. A lot of the stuff could be kind of a sleeping giant just waiting for somebody to spend some time with it. So if you've got the time now, it might be worth looking at.
Absolutely. I think that'll do it then for this episode. We got through a couple Warlocks. I'm pretty happy with that. Just a quick update on merch. I don't have the patches yet for obvious reasons because the entire fucking planet is in lockdown.
Yep.
So hopefully we get those soon, and as soon as I do, I will be mailing them out. So I apologize for the delay. This is never my intent.
It's also kind of not your fault. Like, you didn't start the virus.
See, though, I hope everyone is safe and staying well. Don't listen to your president. You know who I'm talking about.
If you're American, don't listen to the dipshit. I'm allowed to say that because I am American.
All right, I'll let you handle that then. And in the meantime, you can catch us on Discord. War Machine Discord. The link to that will be in the show notes below. I would ask you about upcoming events, but they're all canceled, so, you know.
Sure are. Literally all of them.
Have you been doing any painting, Brian?
No, but I have gotten my painting desk cleaned off and, like, cleared away so I can. And the plan for today is to actually try and get some done. I had to get, like, things cleaned off and cleared off first, though, because I had way too much clutter in here to be able to actually sit down and do anything. So I'm hoping by the end of the day I can get my Striders done and the two Deathstalkers that I have half done finished.
Sweet. Looking forward to seeing that.
How about you? You get anything finished lately?
I've been kind of monkeying with some Riot Quest models. I finished up Flugwug and the Treasure Chest.
Riot Quest!
Right, apparently that's a video I need to watch. I have yet to see that.
You didn't see the reveal video from, like, the Lock and Load? I think it was 2 years ago now?
No, because everyone said it was dumb as hell, and I just avoided it.
It super was. But that's the appealing part of it, is it was dumb as hell.
Well, we'll maybe include a link to that, if I can find it. Alright, well, thank you all for listening to episode 64 of Blightbringers. We'll talk to you again.
Bye, everybody. Stay safe. Wash your damn hands.
Thanks, Ryan.